A few weeks ago, in a service that I wasn't here for because I was on holidays, there was a charming little skit where Lily and Nathan were deciding who sits on the seat. You remember that at all? Yeah. It was hard to hear. There was a bit of a challenge of miking Nathan on that day, but Lily came through strong. And Lily was playing herself, just being Lily, but Nathan was playing Jesus. And Nathan was being invited by Lily to sit on her seat. We might say her throne. It'll come a little stronger in a moment. And so she invites Nathan, a.k.a. Jesus, to sit on her seat of her life because she says, Jesus, you make such good decisions. I want you there. But every time something came up, we see Lily sliding herself onto the seat and pushing Jesus off. She sits on her own seat. She sits on the throne of her life in order to make decisions for herself. And there's Jesus on the sideline, and he eventually says to Lily, this isn't working very well. You say you want me to sit on the seat of your life, but every time something comes up, you push me off. And of course, it isn't working very well. Only one person at a time can sit on that seat. And the question, of course, is who's going to sit there? This little skit illustrated brilliantly what I have been trying to share with you over the past couple of months. The concept of whose will is to be done in our lives. Do we commit ourselves to doing our own will, or do we yield the seat and allow God to sit on it? Which means that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Something we just said in the service, did we not? To say the Lord's Prayer with integrity is to commit ourselves to yielding the throne of our lives to God. To step down off the seat or the throne so that God can now step up. But that's not easy to do. I loved how Lily so easily and gently pushed Jesus off the seat. Wasn't done with malice or with ill intent. It was simply something that had to be done. If she's going to have her own will done in life, she's going to have to sit on the seat of her own throne. And the temptation came to her again and again to sit on that throne, and it was too great for her to resist. Like it is for us, too. Now, the Bible has a simple word for our inclination to slide onto the throne of our own lives and push the Lord off. And that simple word is sin. Sin is our tendency to aspire to sit on our own throne and to displace God with ourselves, to replace God with ourselves. Sin is not about being naughty. It's not about being ill-tempered or nasty. It's not about being vicious or selfish, although these things can easily stem from sin, if we mean by sin sitting on the seat of our lives, on the throne of our lives, as we pursue our own will being done. Sin is about claiming my right to myself. I'm going to decide today what's good and bad for me. I'm going to get enough power, perhaps even to decide what's good and bad for you, too, if I'm lucky. According to the Bible, this is the essential underlying problem of the world. And think about it. If I'm trying to get my will done in life, and you're trying to get your will done in life, and there's Jennifer down the street trying to get her will done in life, and there's Scott way over there trying to get his will done in life, we begin to develop a dilemma, a quandary. Whose will is going to get done in the midst of all this? Because things are going to start overlapping very quickly. In Jerusalem, there is a church called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's considered the most holiest place in Christianity. It's the place where Jesus' dead body was laid after he was crucified. It's the place where his resurrection took place, too. In the 1830s, the Turks were in charge of Jerusalem. They were Muslims, so the French made a special arrangement with the Turks to look after the Church of the Holy Sepulchre on behalf of Christianity. The only problem was that the Russians had made the same deal with the Turks, too. They were to be the special guarantors and caretakers of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And on Easter Eve, sometime in the 1830s, I forget the date exactly, on the evening called Holy Saturday, just before Easter, in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, it was full of French Roman Catholics and Russian Orthodox Christians. And a huge argument developed between the two groups about who was going to be in charge, whose way was going to be done in the moment, who was going to get to decide what happens in this holiest of holy places. And ultimately, a fight broke out in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And it became quite vicious. In the place where Jesus' dead body was laid after he was crucified, in the very place where Jesus was raised to new life by God, the creator of all things, in that very place, a major fight broke out, and at the end of it all, 40 people lay dead on the ground. Are you surprised at how fast things can escalate in life when two people or even two groups start arguing over whose will gets priority? My will or your will? Which will triumph today? Now, I have to tell you, my wife Sally, who's not here today, thankfully, is very proud and stubborn. Just want to make sure she's not here. And I'm a very gentle man. I want you to know, even tempered and good-natured, whom you never hear complain, who has the milk of human kindness by the quart in every vein. A patient man am I, down to my fingertips, the sort who could never, would never, let an insulting remark escape his lips. Very gentle man. What do you think? No? I stole this from My Fair Lady, right? And of course, it's a bunch of nonsense for me, and it's a bunch of nonsense for Professor Higgins, if you know the story. Most of us are pretty hard-nosed of trying to get our way in life. Even the most innocent-seeming person is iron-willed when it comes to getting their way. This struggle to get our way gets reenacted over and over again in little situations, little skits, we might say, between individuals and small groups of people, sometimes between large groups of people under the spotlight. I've been thinking a lot recently about Joe Biden. He had a debate with Donald Trump maybe 9 or 10 days ago. And if you watched the debate or you saw clips of it, it didn't go well for him because he looked pretty old and frail, which is probably the worst thing that could possibly happen to him at a debate. And there's been all this whirlwind of news since then about whether Biden should stay in the race to be president of the United States or whether he should bow out. And of course, Joe Biden doesn't want to step down. He doesn't think he needs to. He thinks he's fully capable of doing the job into the future. And I have a lot of sympathy for him. You know, to be president of the United States was the goal of his life. And now that he is president, he doesn't want to yield his job prematurely. And he also doesn't want to concede to what people are saying about him either. What people today are asking of Joe Biden is not easy to do. It's not easy to step down. Whatever situation we are in, it's not easy to step down. And before we judge him too harshly for his pride or stubbornness, I think we need to do a deep dive into our own hearts and look at where we might be out of touch with the needs of the moment in our lives, where we might be insisting that our own will be done to the detriment of ourselves and others. The reality of sin is part of the reality of life. Everyone we deal with is struggling in one way or another with it. Every situation we come across is riddled with the confusion of whose and what's will is to be done here and now. And I think most of us are not reconciled to the fact of sin in life. We don't take it into consideration in our interactions with others. We're shocked or disappointed about how other people respond to situations. We're frustrated by their choices and selections in life. We're offended by their pride or stubbornness. We are outraged, even at times disgusted at by other people's words and actions. And I think at the heart of our responses in life is an unwillingness to accept the reality of sin, to accept the fact of sin in our circumstances. Instead, we want to focus on the lofty virtues of human nature, and we expect people to live life independent of the reality of sin. We expect people to have a noble and selfless manner. And when we are confronted with the fact of human wickedness and selfishness, the downright hateful and wrong in human beings, we become disillusioned and deeply disappointed by it. At times, we might even be willing to compromise with it. See, if everyone else is committed to getting their own way in life, well, why not me? Why not you? Are we prepared to take into consideration the reality of sin in the life of others and also within ourselves? Do you have a view of yourself that includes the recognition of sin at work in you? Do you know what it means to enter into rivalry with God in your life, or even rivalry with another person in a situation? I'm going to tell you that many situations in life are going to try to get you to step up on that throne. You know that throne we were looking at there? Even committed Christians, people who want to follow Jesus, people who want the Spirit of God to shine through them to the world, are constantly tempted to push the Lord off the seat, off the throne, as they struggle with their life circumstances. Those people who battled in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre back in the 1830s were not reprobates and monsters. They were people who passionately wanted to follow Jesus and got so caught up in the moment that they lost track of the reality of sin. They didn't take sin into account, and they allowed themselves in that moment to step up on the throne and assert their will with others. And look what happened. We need to be on guard to the fact of sin and realize the danger it immediately brings and say, yes, I see what this sin would mean today. Yes, I see what it would mean in the moment for me to step up and sit on the throne of my life. Now, some people might think that understanding the fact of sin might be a reason for destroying our friendships with each other. But I think quite the opposite. I think friendship requires us to take into consideration the fact of and reality of sin. It's building together of two people who share a mutual respect for what sin can do in their relationship with each other. And I also think that recognizing the reality of sin is the only basis upon which true forgiveness can both be given and received. I'm sorry for what I did to you when I sat up on the throne of my life in order to get my will done today. I'm sorry for what I became when I tried to get my way with you. That's what forgiveness is about. In Peter's first letter, Peter is writing to a group of Christians who are under a lot of pressure. They're under a lot of pressure. The world is squeezing them really hard. And the temptation in the moment is to find some way to fight back, to relieve the pressure. Peter has just been instructing, just in the few verses before we started today, he's been instructing the leaders and the elders of the church he's been writing to. And he stresses to them that even though they have a responsibility of authority, they're not to lord it over each other, They're not to lord it over the other members of the church. They're not to sit up on the throne of their life in the exercising of their responsibility. He says instead, be a passionate example of what it means to follow Jesus, which means to yield the throne of our life to God. That's what it means to follow Jesus. It means to join him in stepping down. And Peter invites the younger members of the church to submit themselves to the elders as an example of what it means to step down. And then he says to the whole church, you are to clothe yourselves with humility with each other. That is, everyone is to step down in their relationships with each other. No one is to lord it over anyone else in the community of love that Jesus founded. And what Peter's talking about is the reality of sin within the community of believers. They are to resist collectively in stepping up on the throne, God's throne, in their lives. And they are to make a mutual commitment to not sit on that throne over each other. That is the call that Peter gives to all of them. Peter reminds the whole congregation that God opposes the proud but favors the humble. You see, the proud sit on God's throne, but the humble step down and yield that throne to God. And at the core of all this movement downwards is a trust. You know, we step down off the throne because we acknowledge a deep trust and confidence in God. See, Peter calls us to trust God in today's circumstances, to trust God's guiding hand as God moves us forward in life, to believe that God will see us through whatever challenge we've been faced with. If we hand over our present and future to God, God will see us through. He says this, he says, humble yourselves therefore under God's mighty hand that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Because the creator of the universe loves you. Like really loves you. Peter reminds the congregation that they're to be alert and of sober mind, which means that they're to take into consideration the reality of sin in the world. They are to understand the forces that play around them that would cause them to push God away off the throne. Forces that would encourage them instead to take God's place in their own life. That's the temptation of the devil. God, push God off the throne. The devil is constantly calling us to push God off the throne. Take control for yourself. Be the master of your own destiny. Be proud and stubborn in the face of your circumstances. And the devil is going to use the pressure of our lives, circumstances, to thwart our willingness to step down. Peter says to the faithful, resist him, the devil, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. Peter reminds those who follow the Lord that the temptation of the world is always to usurp God's rule in our lives. And the promise, of course, is that God is seeing us through. That's what Peter stresses in his total letter. The first letter of Peter is really about how God will see us through, will deliver us from the circumstances that we face, no matter what they might be. We don't need to put our lives under new management. If we follow Jesus, we are in God's hands, and we can trust this truth. And the grace of the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. To him be the power forever and ever. Amen. Jesus Christ never trusted human nature. That is, he always took it into consideration the reality of sin in people's circumstances. And yet he was never cynical or suspicious about human nature either, because he had an absolute trust in what he could do for human nature. And Jesus shows us firsthand what it means to step down. And he gives to each of us who follow him, by the blessing of the Holy Spirit, the power for ourselves also to step down from the throne of our lives. What would it be like, do you suppose, if today we all agreed together, all of us, each one of you, and me too, we agreed together to step off the thrones together? Imagine living in a church community where everyone agreed to live this way with each other. Not trying to assert our own way, getting our own way in life, but truly, humbly, all of us stepping off the throne and living in a community of service and love for each other. This is what we are called to as the followers of Jesus. We take into account the reality of sin in human affairs. We even take into account the reality of sin in our affairs with each other, in our lives with each other. But we don't allow ourselves to become cynical or suspicious of human nature. And we don't allow ourselves to become cynical or suspicious of each other. We join with Jesus in the absolute trust in what God can do for human nature through us. We commit ourselves to showing the world what it means when a group of people come together and commit to step down from the throne together so God can step up in our place. And my prayer for Joe Biden is that he comes to know this. Stepping up to be president of the United States, that is a powerful opportunity. But as Jesus has showed us, stepping down gracefully is probably even more powerful.